Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and it is now or never. And as a matter of fact, we've got Paul Venable with us today again. And we're still going through the Massachusetts ratification debates. But, folks, I got to let you know, I was kind of talking to Mr. Venable here about what I'm going to be doing on the presidential campaign and what we're going to have on our presidential page on Reclaiming the Republic. And I think, you know, you're going to love this because you're actually going to see the powers that the president actually possesses. And, you know, what he's supposed to be able to do, what he's doing and what he's not doing and so forth. And so this way you'll actually have a perspective of a constitutional president, somebody that's actually operating and fulfilling their oath by faithfully executing the Constitution. So anyway, and what am I wrong? I think everybody's going to love this.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I think it's a great idea.
All right. So back to where we were. We're down to the Honorable Mr. Bowden. And this is kind of a long one where he goes into taxation and the falling of the Confederation. And so this is a really good insight, folks, on, you know, what really was going on at the time. And, you know, nobody can tell you ground truth other than those people living at the time. There's lots of people that like to get out there and say, oh, well, this was, the people that tell you that the Constitution was a runaway convention. Well, they're only giving you a very, very segregated snapshot of a very small portion of society, of those who actually support their premise. I mean, if you actually went back into time, they actually resolved this. It wasn't an issue. It was an issue for the Anti-Federalists, and that was it. And the Anti-Federalists lost the debate in every state. So why do we continue to hash things that have been settled? Because it serves a purpose. And what is that purpose? It keeps us divided. That is a very powerful thing if you're the enemy of the Constitution and an enemy of the state. Maintaining division instead of uniting and unifying on the Constitution. Interesting. And so I'll bet you anything that, you know, if you circled and followed the money all around from the, you know, the Convention of States on both sides, it probably still comes back to, the, you know, the same kitty or two pots working as one. But anywho. Without any further ado, I apologize for going down a quick rat hole. Again, are you with me, Paul? You know where we're going?
Sure.
Where we're starting? Sure. So go ahead and kick her off. Go ahead.
So this was the Honorable Mr. Bowden, and the subtitle is Taxation and the Failing of the Confederation. In considering it, every gentleman will reflect how inadequate to the purposes of the Union the Confederation has been. When the plan of the Confederation was formed, the enemy were invading us, and this inspired the several states with such a spirit of union and mutual defense that a mere requisition or recommendation of Congress was sufficient to procure the needful aids without any power of coercion. And for that reason, among others, no such power was given by the Confederation. But since that reason, it says bad ceased, but I think it means had ceased, and the idea of danger being removed by the peace, the requisitions of Congress have, in most of the states, been little regarded, notwithstanding they solemnly pledged their faith to comply with them. This noncompliance has compelled Congress to increase the foreign debt of the Union by procuring further loans to pay the interest and installments due on former loans, and in that way to preserve the public faith, which had been pledged to foreign powers. It has compelled them, in order to prevent the consequences of a breach of faith as relative to those powers, to enter repeatedly into those ruinous negotiations by which, quote, the United States jointly and each of them in particular, together with all their lands, chattels, revenues, and products, and also the imposts and taxes already laid and raised in the same or in time to come to be laid and raised, are for the whole, end quote, mortgaged for the repayment of those loans by installments and for the payment of interest on them annually. Chair, can I pause here a minute?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, because what I'm hearing here is that because only a few of the states were paying their requisitions, it was forcing the Confederation to borrow money to keep up
just to pay the interest.
Their responsibilities, yes. Just to pay the interest.
Right.
Had the states, and what the point it seems to be made being made here is, had the states performed their duty as they had pledged to, the Confederation wouldn't have been in this precarious situation. But they're trying to maintain their honor by paying their debts.
Right.
And they're getting more and more in trouble with every passing day. That's what I'm reading here.
Yeah. And actually, if we remember what you read yesterday regarding General Thompson, I think General Thompson was the Anti-Federalist. If you remember what he was saying we should not even go into this. Well, they're already in, and they already signed on with the Continental Congress and the Confederation. Now he's basically saying we need to, completely get out of this. Now, he pointed out that during the Revolutionary War, them in Connecticut were the primary forces, about half of the forces of the Continental Army fighting the war. There was, a good point in time where they were the preponderance of the army. And bottom line, if you really look at how he was creating this spin, Massachusetts had the most to lose. That's why they were so engaged, because, they were a small little state and lots of people, and so they would have been easy to pick and basically be plucked out and harassed the most because they were all in one little spot. So during the wartime, they were the most vulnerable, and this is why they sent the most amount of people to ensure that they had enough in the army to, if necessary, to pull the army to Massachusetts to say, we've got to protect our homeland. And there's no doubt in my mind that if Britain decided to go into Massachusetts to actually, make that a stronghold for them, because they were there and Washington basically kicked their butts and then they got out of Boston, which forced Britain to move to New York, and New York became its homestead for a long time. And so I'm just trying to, if you really start looking at what everything that happened in the macro view, Massachusetts had the most interest and the most to gain in protecting themselves by creating a union and getting everybody else, because they were the first to actually be affected.
Right.
And so
That
this is why they knew that they needed to maintain the forces and so forth. It really helps paint the picture of, why Massachusetts joined the Union. And here's this general saying, we have the ability to stand alone, forgetting what at that point in time that they really did need the Union to defeat Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So anyway, all right.
I'll go on.
Okay.
But he continues. Here's what he says. These debts must be paid bona fide according to the contract, or be further increased by procuring, if procurable, further loans, which, ruinous as the measure is, must be continued unless the states empower Congress to raise money for discharging those debts. It will not be in the power of the United States, and I'm sure it will not be in their inclination to rid themselves of those debts in the same base and ignominious manner in which a faction in one of them are endeavoring to get rid of theirs. To the same cause, and noncompliance with congressional requisitions are owing the repeated but necessary breaches of public faith in regard to the payment of the federal domestic debt. And hence, as relative to the joint consolidated debt, the inefficiency of the public finances and the bankrupt state of the federal treasury, which can never be remedied without empowering Congress to levy adequate duties and taxes, without such a power, the accumulated debt will never be paid, but by a forcible collection, which our foreign creditors know how and are able to apply if unhappily it should be necessary. The several loans, which by contract are to be paid by installments, will, in case of the failure of any of the stipulated payments, become the whole of them immediately payable, and any of the property of any of the states, whether public or private, that can be most easily come at, will, in that case, be seized and applied for that purpose. This mode of reimbursement or reprisal will be upon the trade and navigation of the United States, and in proportion as ours of this state may be larger and more extensive than the trade and navigation of other states, we shall be the greatest sufferers. This ruin of our trade will involve in it not only the ruin of the mercantile part of the state and of the numerous body of mechanics dependent upon it, but it will most essentially affect every other class of citizens and operate most extensively to the injury of the Commonwealth. These are some of the consequences, certain and infallible, that will flow from the denial of that power to Congress. Shall we then, we of this state, who are so much interested in this matter, deny them that power, a power so essential to our political happiness? But if we attend to our trade as it is at present, we shall find that the miserable state of it is owing to a like want of power in Congress. Other nations prohibit our vessels from entering their ports or lay heavy duties on our exports carried thither, and we have no retaliating or regulating power over their vessels and exports to prevent it. Hence a decrease of our commerce and navigation and the duties and revenue arising from them. Hence an insufficient demand for the produce of our lands and the consequent discouragement of agriculture. Hence the inability to pay debts and particularly taxes which by that decrease are enhanced. And hence, as the necessary result of all these, the emigration of our inhabitants. If it be asked, how are these evils and others that might be mentioned to be remedied? The answer is short: by giving Congress adequate and proper power. Whether such power be given by the imposed proposed Constitution, it is left with the conventions from the several states and with us who compose one of them to determine.
Yeah, so
in determining, go ahead.
I'm not sure as you're reading this how, you know, he's making the argument that by creating this consolidated government that will have the energy to actually pay its debt and to be able to enforce trade. I mean, he's actually pointing out, and what came to my mind is just, this was a single liner. The Constitution was so successful that it has brought forward other types of unions in the world. Look at the EU. The EU was a huge, huge endeavor to bring together these, you know, really disparate states. I mean, they all had their own twists and they all had their own problems. I mean, Europe was always divided, but they realized that there was no way they can compete against the United States when it came to economics because they were divided. They were constantly being picked. So by falling into this unified trade pact of the economic union, it gave them more leverage, but it was still plagued because they didn't surrender enough. In other words, certain states had much higher value added tax, what they call VAT tax, and right. That was to pay for their socialism, where other states didn't have that. They didn't have as much socialism. And so because they didn't have this uniformity in how they were working, it still kind of plagued them, but they still had an advantage by forming the union. This only, you know, when we really start looking at it, all of these people that were making these arguments against the power of this union by for the foreign trade and taxes and so forth, evidence and the empirical data proves that all these anti-federalists were actually blowing smoke. They were actually self-serving, and they didn't have a leg to stand on. So that's, I'm sorry for the intrusion. Keep going.
No, that's, so what you're saying is that the European Union is probably a bad copy of our union, of our republic, for the very reason that they need to better compete with us instead of being separate entities, because we've been so effective financially.
Yeah, so they were forced to try to do something, but they didn't do enough because they didn't empower the economic union to enforce anything. You know, they just basically kind of only agreed on the trade stuff, which is why, you know, what happened to Spain? What happened to Greece in the economic union? They fell apart because of socialism.
Right.
Right. And that happened under the umbrella of the EU. Right. And so it just goes to show that the EU was inept and impotent to do the things that was necessary, that what the framers did within our union, if that makes sense. And so
it
actually proves that what we did actually, you know, put us on a course that, you know, nobody could compete with us. As a matter of fact, this was even before Adam Smith wrote The Wealth of Nations. He wrote The Wealth of Nations in 1776. And he pointed to the Americas, as he said, if the Americas really got it together, they would be the most powerful economic, you know, force in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And so that's why the framers loved that book, because they kind of looked at what he was saying and tried to implement the free market in that system here. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right. In determining on this question, every gentleman will doubtless consider the importance of cultivating a spirit of union among ourselves and with the several states. This spirit procured our emancipation from British tyranny, and the same spirit, by uniting us in the necessary means, must secure to us our dear-bought, blood-purchased liberty and independence, and deliver us from evils which, unless remedied, must end in national ruin. The means for effecting these purposes are within our reach, and the adoption of the proposed Constitution will give us the possession of them. Like all other human productions, it may be imperfect, but most of the imperfections imputed to it are ideal and unfounded, and the rest are of such a nature that they cannot be certainly known but by the operations of the Constitution, and if in its operation it should in any respect be essentially bad, it will be amended in one of the modes prescribed by it. I say will be amended because the Constitution is constructed in such principles that its bad effects, if any, should arise from it, will injure the members of Congress equally with their constituents, and therefore both of them must be equally induced to seek for and effectuate, if possible, the requisite amendments.
Mm-hmm.
There have been many objections offered against the Constitution, and of these, the one most strongly urged has been the great power vested in Congress. On this subject, I beg leave to make a few general observations, which ought to be attended to as being applicable to every branch of that power. It may therefore be observed that the investiture of such power, so far from being an objection, is a most cogent reason for accepting the Constitution. The power of Congress, both in the legislative and executive line, is the power of the people, collected through a certain medium to a focal point, at all times ready to be exerted for the general benefit, according as circumstances or exigencies may require. If you diminish or annihilate it, you diminish or annihilate the means of your own safety and prosperity, which means if they were to be measured like mathematical quantities, would be in exact proportion as the power is greater or less. But this is not the case. For power that does not reach or is inadequate to the object is worse than none. An exertion of such powers, an exertion of such power would increase the evil if it was intended to remove, and at the same time create a further evil, which might be a very great one, the expense of a fruitless exertion. Jerry, I think this is an interesting paragraph. I'm wondering if you would just comment on that a little more, because he says, but in this case, for power that does not reach or is inadequate to the object is worse, essentially worse than no power at all.
Right. So he's talking, because he starts this off at the very top of the paragraph. It may therefore be observed that the investiture of such power, so far being an objection, is a most cogent reason for accepting the Constitution. The power of Congress, both in the legislative and executive line, is the power of the people. So how is the president elected?
He's not elected by the Electoral College,
who are elected by the people. In other words, this is a distant non-democracy government, so that, we make sure that the people have a voice. Well, what they didn't include here is, is the Constitution going to be perverted? Because over time, the Constitution got perverted, like the Electoral College. The parties control it now, where the parties are basically doing everything they can to protect their interest, which is what institutions do. Institutions protect their interest, and they put their interest over, what they're supposed to do. And in this particular case, they're supposed to be supporting the Constitution, but they don't, which is why we no longer support the Constitution, which is why I tell people, what type of government do we have? We have a monarchical party form of democracy or democratic socialism. That's what we have, because the parties have decided to basically assume any power necessary to basically appease the people. There is no authority for any of this to be going on, none whatsoever. And so anyway, if you look at this, and he says it, but as he goes through, if you diminish it or annihilate it, you diminish or annihilate the means of your own safety and prosperity. So in other words, going down this path of giving them this essential power, we have to keep them within the framework, because like it says, if we diminish or annihilate, these things, the power and the controls, the checks and the balances, then it actually becomes very destructive. And that's what we see today. We actually see our government being controlled by external forces waging warfare upon its own states and people. There's no authority for doing any of this. This is how perverted we have gone as far as a nation goes. The Constitution is not the problem. As a matter of fact, I have these arguments with these nationalists all the time. They look at the Constitution as, as dung. They look at it as just, disgusting, byproduct of evil, when, it's not what they think it is, because when they look at the Constitution, they believe the Constitution and the government are the same, because they believe that what the government is doing has somehow been legitimized under this Constitution. And that is the furthest thing from the truth. All of the things that they have done has been unconstitutionally, I should say, injected into government. They have assumed powers unconstitutionally. They have used unconstitutional arguments to assume these powers and got the states to hoodwink and everybody, we'll go along with it, not realizing hundreds of years ago that it would eventually end up to where the actual federal government that they're allowing and hoodwinking to violate the Constitution would end up waging broad-spectrum warfare against its own people and states.
Right.
So with that,
so
you can't
monarchical form of party
democracy. Yeah, I'll get back to that. We're going into a hard break right here, I know you can hear me. So if you just hold on to that, what I was saying was a monarchical party form of democratic socialism. That's the form of government that we have. And we'll be right back after these promos. So folks, stay tuned. We've got more ratification debates right after this. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Sorry about that. So I wish I could fix it so that you could actually hear the music when it starts stepping on you, but so we're supposed to have a Republican form of government, which is very specific in America, because our representation isn't the just representation of the people. It's the representation of sovereigns. In other words, the people being sovereign have their own representative, and the government that the people create for the federal level, the government created underneath the federal level would be the states that the people create via their counties. At the state level, that would be a general government for the counties, and that the people create their counties, and the counties created the state. So we should have a bicameral legislative body in the states as well, where the counties are represented in the Senate and the people are represented in the House of Representatives. That was the model that was really given, but they couldn't inflict that, because the federal government couldn't go in and reorganize the states. But what happened was the states started reorganizing. They started kind of duplicating, but they didn't go all the way. They didn't go all in, because had they done that, then people would absolutely today probably have a very good understanding of bicameral legislative bodies and governing, that we have dual interests both at the government level that we've created at our local level at the county, as well as our own personal interests, and having them divided to make sure that those things that we are not necessarily attuned, we don't affect those, and the things that we're, very interested in, the sovereigns don't affect those, like, going to war, or, public service, or, jury duty, those types of things. So anyway, the monarchical party democratic form of socialism is the form of government that we have today. And when I say monarchical, because if you look at it, once you become elevated within the party, like the Kennedys, then you actually become Camelot in that party. So we have these opposing monarchical forms, whether it be the Clintons, Obamas, and Kennedys, or whether it be the Bushes, or what have you. And nine times out of ten, I would say the Republican or the conservative side has been less, when you're on the high road, you're less likely to, invoke nepotism. You're less likely to do things that, people recognize as bad. But where do you see the party that has no scruples? It's always been the Democratic Party, where nepotism lives and it thrives.
Right.
And so anyway, I pulling myself out of the rat hole, did I answer your question that we actually have a monarchical party, democratic form of socialism? That's the form of government that we have. Okay.
That's actually I heard you. I just wanted you to repeat it for me, because That's not what we're supposed to have. What you're saying is that's what we're actually practicing.
That's when you look at it, right? Because we actually see even in state levels. I mean, you can go to actually you could probably go to Chicago, where Chicago's notorious for the mayor of Chicago, to be kind of ruled by families. The same thing.
You can't come in here with noise. I'm recording. Close my door, please.
Okay. I'm sorry. Let me close your door.
I thought
it's okay. It's
so
okay.
Let, I thought I had
muted
myself.
Yourself. I get it. What I was saying is, and I was trying to explain to the audience that you can look at geographical areas such as the Louisiana area. There are families within those areas that have risen to have a long political prominence. That is not supposed to be happening. The only way it can happen is via a party system, because the reality is people try to collectively work together so that they can obtain power. And so people have failed to realize that, oh yeah, the nice thing about parties is that they're powerful. The worst thing about parties is their power, because power corrupts. And when you go down the path of creating political power, you're creating political corruption. And the best way to get rid of political corruption is getting rid of the parties, getting rid of the monarchical party, democratic socialism that we have today. Because the parties are constant. We're not amending the Constitution to grant powers. The parties are making the compromise to say, we're going to allow health care. We're going to allow the Department of Babysitting to be formed. They decide what they are going to basically put upon us, and they do it because we do not use the Constitution as our defense and as our weapon and hold them accountable. Every person that actually starts talking, I've gotten probably a lot of hate, and I think a lot of people look at me as a very intolerable person when I'm dealing with these state nationals, these sovereign citizens, what have you, because they're making these disparaging comments towards the Constitution. And they're so illiterate, and they're so stupid. They want to, leap off the cliff as an imbecile to say this, it's all gone anyway, when it's not. The Constitution has not been discarded. The states have failed to do everything that they were supposed to do. We can still save the ship. As long as the states have the ability, as long as they have not set aside the Constitution to allow the federal government to discard it, that is coming, and it's coming quickly. If there's anything that I would say, that you can count on this, I can't give you the day, but the day will come when the states will be standing at the precipice of a decision that the federal government will put upon them. And actually, it won't be a decision. The federal government is going to tell them that they have to discard the Constitution to survive. This will all be tied to our digital currency. It'll all be tied to economics. And everybody will be filled with despair and will say, let's do it. And when we do, we will rue the day. But if we want to actually save America, save our economy, and get ourselves and pull our britches back up and become a great nation again, we need the states to take a stand and actually stand up and tell the federal government, you have no authority to discard that compact. It is ours, not yours. And there you go. That's when we get the states to actually finally take a stand and say, we don't owe that money you say we have to pay. That is something that you owe. And this is where the states need to quickly and swiftly come in and actually start pointing to every criminal that has been involved in this extortion from the Obamas and the Clintons and every one of them and say, if China and the world want their pound of flesh, these are the people that we will send them, because they're the ones that they colluded with in trying to undermine our liberty. That debt goes away. We don't owe anything. And if America all of a sudden has no trading partners, then guess what? America has to start producing everything itself again. The danger is that we're seeing our cattle ranchers killing off their cattle because they can't afford to water them and feed them. It's the same thing with our farm. We have economic warfare big time, and the states need to start stepping in and saying, what do we need to do to help you farmers actually, because the states can do this. The states should be able to do this as a state of emergency, step in and provide the resources to make sure that we can provide for our people. Because if we don't, if the states don't do this, the federal government will get away. Because if you want to understand how tyranny can actually grab you by your throat is when they take away your food and your ability to survive. Most people talk about the insidious education. They talk about all of these things, but they forget about the one thing that we need three times a day, and that's the water and food, our basic subsistence. And when our government is actually doing everything to take that away, that's how they're going to control you. You want to see how evil and how dark this new government that's coming? They're ruthless, and they will say, you will die because we don't care. There's too many people on this earth anyway. And you hear me saying these things. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that's their mindset.
That is.
They're not, one, they're not hiding it anymore. Two, one of the reasons you described that, farmers, killing their cattle and I've seen them throwing away milk, but it is the result of the feds putting them in a position where they can't afford to farm. And now what you're seeing is that it's not the farmers that are doing it, but you are seeing food production just get destroyed mysteriously. A farm of 18,000 cows last week just exploded and killed all the cows.
Yes, so you're right. There is being done by people that have – so you got to understand how this corruption works. Tim McVeigh actually worked with a few people, but he willingly went to his grave because there's no way Timmy McVeigh brought down the Oklahoma building. There were two blasts in that building, and there's no way he put the ordnance inside that building to actually blow it from the inside out to actually disperse all of the crap that you saw that happened. And so Timmy McVeigh went to his grave basically with all the credit. So he was the one that's what he wanted. He was an ideologue. He wanted all of the credit. So the cabal said, this is great. This is the perfect day. This is what we want in people. People that are so selfish that they want to go down as, this historic name like Timmy McVeigh. That's their perfect ideal, to get some people to collude with them and go off, and then they get all the credit, and nobody knows the truth. And so that's ideologues are very, very dangerous. But what we're seeing is that they've got these ideologues that are willing to actually take guns into schools, willing to take ordnance, or willing to fly a plane right into, a food depot, a production plant, or take bombs and blow these things up. And if you catch them, they will go down as, the person that did it. And they don't care because they get the credit. That's what they want. That's how sick people are. So anyway, we went down a rat hole. So there was some of this that we needed to finish up. Okay.
Okay. If we consider the objects of the power, they are numerous and important, and as human foresight cannot extend to many of them, and all of them are in the womb of futurity, the quantum of the power cannot be estimated. Less than the whole, as relative to federal purposes, may, through its insufficiency, occasion the dissolution of the Union and a subjugation or division of it among foreign powers. Their attention is drawn to the United States. Their embassies are watching our conduct, particularly upon the present most important occasion. And if we should be so unhappy as to reject the federal constitution proposed to us and continue much longer our present weak, unenergetic federal government, their policy will probably induce them to plan a division or partition of the states among themselves and unite their forces to effect it. G.R., what he's describing
is what's happening.
Is what's happening right now.
Is what happened during the Civil War. In other words, these men were so, they understood things of how things were working and how things worked. They understood how the enemy would attack us. Even Mason was a very brilliant man. And these guys, you know, that without compromise demanded that we have a Bill of Rights and so forth. I mean, they made great arguments, and Mason was one of them. But they all knew. They all knew our vulnerabilities, and absolutely, this is how they played against us. I mean, earlier on, we read about how, you know, a state or some foreign entity could inject money into our elections and actually overrun our elections that way. That's been happening for decades and decades. It's gone all the way back to the 1800s. You can't tell me Britain hasn't been involved in bringing gold to America, putting gold in somebody's hands, because why? Why would you use gold and silver to put that into somebody's hands to do something?
Because it's real money.
And it's non-traceable. In other words, all of a sudden, if a person has this gold, who's questioning where he got that gold from?
Right. Nobody does.
There's no bank. So even today, and going into this new form, they're going to make it so that we can't use the same tools that they used against us to take the system back. Because if they make a system that traces everything, now they don't have right now the ability to track and trace gold. What they want to do is they want to make it illegal.
Sure.
Like FDR did. You can't possess anything of value like that.
And yeah, I would wind up going down another rat hole, but some point, someday, we need to discuss why the people even allowed FDR to force and his administration to steal their gold.
So that
blows my mind.
Some people call that the greatest generation, but you know what the real title of that was? While I'm talking, do the quick search engine on the labels of the generations, the boomer generation, the baby boomers, and so forth. If you just do a search, baby boomers and all other generations, something like that, you'll actually come up with this list of generations. And so we know that I think it was the X generation that followed the baby boomers, and then it was the Y generation and millennials and so forth. So we had to know from the baby boomers on. But what did they actually call the generation before the baby boomers?
I'm looking.
I believe the formal name was the silent generation.
What they have here is something called, from 1900 to 1945, traditionalists,
right?
And okay,
and then there was
veterans, other names, veterans, silent, moral authority, radio babies,
yes,
forgotten generation. Okay, so silent generation was one of their names,
right? And this, they called them the silent generation because when government started becoming tyrannical, and because they were all having a hard time to survive, and government was coming after them. They were silent. They allowed in other words, it was just like Nazi Germany. The government tyranny was all over the world at that point in time. If you look at what's going on in Germany, the same crap was happening here. FDR was nationalizing industries. They created this symbol called the American Eagle. And every business that actually abided and was in compliance to federal law would be granted an eagle seal to put in their window or above their building. In other words, when you walked in, and they told people, you do business with the businesses that are, you know, wearing the eagle. That same eagle is the eagle that is used today on the Philadelphia Eagles uniform. At least that's what they adopted when they joined the NFL.
Okay.
And so my point is that that's how they controlled everybody because, you know, if you read this book by Jonah Goldberg, it's called Fascism in America or something like that. It's a red book with a yellow smiley face. And he talks about how there was this man that was running a a dry cleaners, a laundry cleaners company business. It was a small little business. And he was actually undercutting because he was only charging what he really needed to, you know, to do the services and make the money. He was living by meager means, and he was trying to be competitive. And so he was undercutting what the federal, they actually had federal standards of what you charge for laundering and pressing and so forth. They
Where was this?
This is in this book. And so this was in America. This guy, the federal government came in and arrested him for actually, you know, operating a competitive business that was undercutting the federal standard. And he was prosecuted for that. Here in America. That was in the 30s. Folks, if you think that it's not going to be worse this next time around, each time they test and they've tried to see, you know, can we get away with this? These evil people knew that, you know, this may not have been the ultimate test. That's okay. We're not really working in league with the devil in, you know, in person. But, you know, they knew that the time would come when they would be. They would be working with the Antichrist or, you know, that evilest point in time, because that's what they were setting us all up for. They knew. They know what the plan is.
Right.
And the Bible tells us that the plan was laid out from the beginning. This is why the Bible foretold of, you know, the coming of Christ and the two times Christ would come. You know, he'd come as a lamb and he would come as a lion. The great and dreadful day of the Lord. And I hate to dive into religion, but the fact of the matter is you can't ignore those facts that are in the Bible. In the scriptures, right. It's very clear. So anyway, so the next section that this Mr. Bowden, the Honorable Mr. Bowden goes into is delegated powers. And so this is important, and this is, you know, really, I think, insightful that he really starts talking about these are the powers that they have. This is it, folks. Okay. So go ahead.
All right. It will be and has been said this great power may be abused and instead of protecting may be employed by Congress in oppressing their constituents. A possibility of abuse, as it may be affirmed, of all delegated power, whatever, is by itself no sufficient reason for withholding the delegation. If it were a sufficient one, no power could be delegated, nor could government of any sort subsist. The possibility, however, should make us careful that in all delegations of importance, like the one contained in the proposed Constitution, there should be such checks provided as would not frustrate the end and intention of delegating the power, but would, as far as it could be safely done, prevent the abuse of it. And such checks are provided in the Constitution. Some of them were mentioned the last evening by one of my worthy colleagues, but I shall here exhibit all of them in one view. The two capital departments of government, the legislative and executive, in which the delegated power resides, consisting of the president, vice president, senate, and representatives, are directly and by the representative legislatures and delegates chosen by the people. Oath. The president and also the vice president, when acting as president, before they enter on the execution of the office, shall each solemnly swear or affirm that he will faithfully execute the oath of president of the United States and will, to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. The senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. The President and Vice President and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes or misdemeanors. No senator or representative shall, during the time for which he was elected, be appointed to any civil office which shall have been created, or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time, and no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either house during his continuance in office. No title of nobility shall be granted in the United States or by any particular state, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under the United States shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
The 13th Amendment basically says this. The original 13th Amendment basically is a duplication of this part of the Constitution.
Correct.
Why?
It just didn't have teeth.
But why? I mean, so now I just now continue on because what you said, it didn't have teeth, but it was already in the Constitution. It was the supreme law that this no title of nobility shall be granted. And as a matter of fact, you know, without the consent of Congress. I mean, if you look at the, you know, the wording and everything else, it's the same. Essentially, there was no need for the 13th Amendment, is my point. But,
correct.
But go ahead and read on now.
In fact, it says, it also says, shall accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind from any king, prince, or foreign state.
Right.
Oh, man, is that being violated?
Right, absolutely. Okay. So go on, because the whole point is that why did we need the 13th Amendment? Why did they come out with a duplication? It's almost like the due process. When the due process was placed into the Bill of Rights, it was also added again into the 14th Amendment. When the due process was already included in the clause of privileges and immunities, that no state could make a law that could, you know, could make or enforce any law that would abridge those privileges and immunities. And it was already there. So I honestly think that sometimes they went overboard to like create a double enforcement that, you know, hey, I dare you. And now I'm going to double dog dare you.
You know, it could also have been that they saw something on the horizon that looked like this may continue to be a problem or it may rear its head. And we want to make sure it's understood that you don't go there. You know, that's, I mean, I wasn't there in that time.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking the only reason that they would add this extra point to it, because as you said, it's obviously already there, is that there were just storm clouds that they could see coming, said, this needs more teeth. We don't want to see this. Okay. So anyway,
go ahead.
Let's see. Okay. I don't want to miss this one either. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and domestic violence.
Right. And so another thing that they violated, because in the 2020 insurrections that were going on in the street, they should have actually stepped in and actually, you know, called forth it, because if the state wasn't going to do it, because bottom line, the states were supposed to be protecting themselves, but we became so doubly corrupt from the local all the way up that our government sat on its hands while they allowed the Bolsheviks to burn us down.
So the very purpose of the militia is because it is necessary to the security of a free state.
Right. So you can't hear this. We're going to have to pick up from where we left off, Paul. And so my apologies. I actually should have been telling you that, you know, we only had a minute left and I didn't even see it. So anyway, we will have to pick this up when we come back, right? In our next episode. So hang in there, Paul. We'll be right back after this. Or actually, I'm G.R. Moby, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way, we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show show reclaiming the republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.